We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Derek Jeter just stepped off the podium like an hour ago. Before we get into it, just want to read you the Hall of Fame plaque, because that was obviously released today for the first time to the public. Derek Sanderson Jeter, the captain, New York, American League, 1995 to 2014. Heartbeat of a Yankees dynasty. Defined a two-decade run of Bronx dominance that produced 17 postseason appearances, 7 American League pennants, and 5 World Series championships. Selected to 14 All-Star games and named 1996 AL Rookie of the Year. Winner of 5 Gold Glove Awards, appearing in all his 2,674 games in the field at shortstop, totaled 200 or more hits in 8 seasons, retiring 6th all-time with 3,465, scored 1,923 runs with 100 or more in 13 seasons, in a record 158 postseason games. This is where it gets good. Batted .308 with 111 runs, 200 hits, 32 doubles, and 20 homers. Earned 2000 World Series Most Valuable Player. Scott, what'd you think of the ceremony, the afternoon, the Jeter stuff, all of it?
So first of all, the afternoon was a long afternoon. It didn't rain for the most part. It you could see the rain coming down when Jeter was up at the podium and he was giving his speech, but it held out enough for everybody to continue to be there. You know, anytime you can go back in history and just tap into that nostalgia and relive some Derek Jeter moments and those mid-90s moments, then it's a good day. I will listen and watch. And, you know, I'm sure for all of that, we were talking like just through text during when the ceremony started, because it started at 1:30 and he didn't get on until what I write down 3:49. So he got on two hours plus later after they introduced every single person that was on stage. And then they went through, you know, a couple of different videos and then had the other inductees go ahead of Jeter. Obviously, they're saving Jeter for to bring it up as the finale, as like the main guy there, which I understand. I like hearing all of the players and a little bit about them. Like, I thought that was fun, just kind of going through them and hearing all of that stuff. We haven't had this in 2 years. So this is, you know, we talk about the Hall of Fame and all of the things that go into it and how mucky it gets with the writers and just people's opinions about the Hall of Fame. And that's fine and dandy, but when you get down to it, you start looking back and you remember these guys playing and you kind of relive their careers in shorts and snippets. And I think it's a lot of fun. So, you know, I missed it last year. Glad we could do it this year. Glad they did it in person. Had a bunch of people there. A lot of Yankees fans, obviously. But I thought it was fun and I thought his speech was good. I thought it was very Derek Jeter-esque.
I found it funny that he made mention of the weather a few times, that he was just hoping it doesn't rain. It's just like, that's something everyone can relate to, whether you're having like family over for a barbecue, you're having a wedding, or you're being inducted into the freaking National Baseball Hall of Fame. You're just hoping it doesn't rain so it doesn't just ruin everyone's time. So I found that to be very relatable to a guy that is very difficult to relate to in most aspects. So,
but not really. But at the same time, not really. But I think
he's a professional athlete worth hundreds of millions of dollars and CEO of a baseball team with a supermodel wife.
Yes.
Not really relatable.
Okay. All of those things that you said are actually very true, but every single person who watched him his entire career does have this relatability to Derek Jeter, because he came up and grew up as a New York Yankee before our eyes. And that was relatable. There are elements of Derek Jeter that are very relatable to New York Yankees fans, because he was there the entire time. We saw him forever. And now he's all grown up and owns a team and has a supermodel wife and all of those things. Like, good for him. No longer relatable, but still the common man seemingly when he's talking to you. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, I guess so. No, I mean, so I actually, people were complaining, maybe sarcastically or not, that like, how do you do this on a Wednesday afternoon, blah, blah, blah. What the frick else are you doing on Wednesday afternoon? Throw this on in the background of work and watch it. The reason I think you and I were taken aback at how long it took for Jeter to get on stage is because we've never sat down and watched an entire Baseball Hall of Fame ceremony. We've seen speeches, like I watched Mariano Rivera's speech, or I watched Ken Griffey Jr.'s speech, but I didn't watch from 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock to hear all the speeches on those ceremonies, because normally they're Sunday afternoons in the middle of the baseball season and there's a baseball game on. So you're probably watching your baseball team, or you're at the beach or something. I actually think they may have stumbled upon a really good idea, and that's doing this when there's no other baseball on. Do this Wednesday afternoon in September, when the entire baseball world has nothing else to do except watch this ceremony.
Let me ask you, if this was in prime time, though, if this was like, 7 or 8 o'clock, they had some lights on, they like did a whole thing, do you think it would be more of an impact and like people would watch it at that point?
Or maybe
the same time as a baseball game, 7 o'clock?
The ratings would probably be better. You know when it would like actually kind of make sense to do, but I think logistically baseball would never do this, is like the day after the All-Star game.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
But they would never do that because other players are traveling and like the commissioner, like logistically it would be a nightmare, but like when else is on the baseball calendar is nothing going on? It's other than the day after the All-Star game.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's whatever. I'm not going to harp on all the details here.
I liked it. That it was in the afternoon. I think that adds a cool atmosphere to it. It's like, it's in the middle of Cooperstown, New York, which is in bumblefuck New York. You're just, it's like old school, right? It's old school.
It's a beautiful town. It's an absolutely beautiful town with the lake there is gorgeous.
Abner Doubleday Field and stuff. It's like, there were no lights when baseball was first around. No, we're doing this in daylight. We're inducting people in daylight. I like it.
Yeah, that's fine. I do too. I was just asking the question. All right, so let's talk about the speech itself, because there were a bunch of stuff in there that I caught. I was writing down notes as I was listening to it, because there were so many small things. And I listened to the interview with him and Harold Reynolds, which I appreciated because I like Harold Reynolds and they're friends. Anybody who doesn't like Harold Reynolds, get your head examined. He's a real, talk about relatable, Harold Reynolds, baby. Anyway, there were a number of things. I took the comment to when he was thanking everybody. So first of all, he thanked his family first and foremost, right? Kind of expected that. Knew he was going to talk about his family a lot, specifically his parents and the people that like shaped him to who he was. He talks about that quite often and really does always kind of lean on his upbringing and the way that he was not only raised at home, but through baseball and through the Yankees organization, which again, relatable to parents. There's a lot of relatability, I think, with there. He's very much family oriented, but he apologized. I thought this was great, because he apologized to the trainers and said, "I'm sorry I lied to you for all those years, but it was my responsibility to play every day." And he kind of paused when he was saying that a little bit, like almost looked into the camera, like he does sometimes. And I felt like it was a jab to all of these soft candy ass players these days, who are continuously sitting out and waiting and not playing in games. he saw it as his responsibility to the fans that it was his job to play every day. He had to earn their respect, their trust. He talked a lot about that. I love when he talks about that because I believe him. He talks about the Yankees fans can't be fooled. He talked about representing all of the fans and New York, like having that weight on his shoulders, and he used that as motivation. Love that.
I like the narrative you're constructing here that he's taking jabs at players who require load management.
It was just a subtle little Derek Jeter-esque thing.
I want to get on board with you, but I've heard him make that statement numerous times before that he lied.
He's trying to layer it in.
He lied to the train. Sorry for, he always does. That's his sort of humor. He's like, yes. Sorry, I lied to you. Smirk. Right. It's like, oh, he said that before.
Anti-dentite bastard.
He's used that line before and that it's his responsibility to play every day. Like that was his job. I'm just doing my job. Like that sort of humble workman's attitude, which, you know, that is what it is. I mean, you are still playing a sport for a living, but yeah, it is your job to play every day. And you did that for basically your entire career. You were injured towards the end, but otherwise, aside from a fluke injury in 2003, you were on the field every day, and that cannot be overlooked. That is the most underrated thing in sports is games played. If you are on the field and playing and making an impact for your team, that's huge. And especially now with what we've seen with players that don't get on the field every day. So
yeah. I guess. I mean, you could also look at it as being an aggregator, but that's not what he was. He wasn't.
I'm not just talking about games total for your career, but like, we'll go look at his baseball reference log. And, you know, A-Rod, who didn't get a mention, which we saw coming from a mile away, he mentioned Bernie and Posada and Pettit and Mariano, obviously, but no A-Rod mention. A-Rod, another player, maybe we know why, because of steroids, but in the prime of his career, 155 games played, 158 games played, same with Jeter. That's what I'm talking about. When you're in the prime of your career, you play 97% of games that your team's in. Like, that's an immense value to your team.
You know, he did spend some time on the fans aspect of it, which I definitely expected. I thought we were going to get some more anecdotal stories from him. He went, 14 minutes, I think it was, or 16
minutes? Yeah,
you keep saying you.
You said you 10 keep, minutes. I said 5 minutes because I had never heard Derek Jeter talk that long. Okay. When he closed out the original old Yankee Stadium, his speech was like 35 seconds.
And yes.
When he did his when they retired number two at Yankee Stadium, he talked for like a minute and a half. Okay. So I had never heard Derek Jeter talk that long. So first of all, the first 3 minutes were just congratulating other people on their awards Then he got into his speech.
It's part of it.
And he spent five minutes thanking his family with some nice stories and stuff. Like it was definitely heartwarming. And then he sort of talked about, I thought the stuff where he, you know, was thanking how now his responsibility is to his wife and his children and building a family and stuff like that. All that stuff was great. Were you expecting more? You were expecting more like baseball stories, though.
I thought we would get a couple of them that would be used as, you know, in an anecdotal way to
trips down memory lane.
Yeah, to represent something, you know, to use it as a backdrop for something there. So you meant the one thing I thought was fantastic and very, again, classic Derek Jeter here, doing things very, very calculated. He was talking about his family. But then he very specifically talked to his kids, who were wrestling the entire time, which I thought was hilarious. But he was talking to his kids, knowing that it was for later, knowing that he's talking to his kids when they're grown up and they'll actually appreciate this. He was saying particular things that were directed to his two daughters that were absolutely for, I get like goosebumps here, chills, because, you know, when you think about your children, obviously now the two of us both have kids. When you think about them growing up, like that's a very crazy thought, but it's something that's, you know, he was definitely talking to his children as if they were older, knowing that they would look back and see this speech and hear him talking directly to them. And I thought that was awesome.
They can't possibly appreciate it. Right
no, now. They can't possibly. Of course not. There were little kids wrestling around. Like one of them was gouging the other one's eyeballs out, and Ahmad Rashad's just sitting back there going, you know, just like less like damn kids, you know, and. I thought it was very cool, but again, like pretty classic Derek Jeter and doing a lot of things, you know, calculated in a way that he knows will be impactful to a certain person or a certain moment in a particular way. And I thought that was definitely one of them. But
A couple of, I mean, the money quote of it, at least the money quote that people were taking, was that I had one goal in my career: to win more than anyone else. We did. What's your favorite aspect of that quote? I wonder if it's the same as mine.
The "we did" part of it. So he definitely.
And like, I obviously he made a point to say "we did," but like other players that would win as much as him would say, I had one goal in my career: to win more than anyone else, and I did.
And I accomplished that.
Yeah, but Jeter said "we did" because maybe this is just my naivete and just love for Derek Jeter. Like, I truly believe he thinks of it as "we won."
Of course he does. I mean, who's going to push back on that right now? Nobody. Nobody on these mics, I can tell you that. But of course, like, the reason why he got there, I think so much of the slander that's directed towards Derek Jeter from jackasses across the interwebs of space is, when you look at him, like, he's not a specimen of an athlete. He's not like a prototypical, like, insanely athletic guy. Like, he had his flaws. He had his strong suits, but he did rely on the things that he did well, and he did them very well. He didn't do everything well, but he did the things that he did well. And he relied on the guys around him, I think, to put him in good situations. So when you look at him as the type of player he was, yes, he was very big in clutch moments, but he also had to be in those clutch moments to effectively
and
be there.
He came through in those clutch moments. He had a season's worth of postseason experience, and he hit above 300 with 200 hits and all those runs scored. Like, he came through against the toughest competition. You know, I just did that podcast with Johnny Junta. He's the Blue Jays guy. And he was like, oh, if Derek Jeter played for the Milwaukee Brewers, like, he wouldn't be a Hall of Famer. And it's like, I hate that argument, because you could say that about anybody in sports who's won a lot. Oh, if Tom Brady played for the Miami Dolphins, he wouldn't be a Hall of Famer. Or if Michael Jordan played for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, yes, you need to be surrounded by a great team and a great organization for great players to do great things. Like, they can't do it on their own. Would Jeter still have been a great player in Milwaukee? Sure. But he's probably not going to be the legend that he is, because that's part of it. You need to be put in the position to do that and then come through in those positions.
Right. And you have to be surrounded with, I mean, it is a team sport at the end of the day. I mean, look what's happening in Anaheim. Mike Trout, lauded as the, you know, best player in baseball, hasn't won a goddamn thing because hasn't been surrounded. And then the year he actually gets a little bit of talent around him, he doesn't play. But there's definitely opportunity, but you have to be ready for those opportunities. There were a couple other things. Oh, so when he was also, again, very Derek Jeter, I was looking for these little things. This is what I was kind of like trying to reverse engineer all the things that he was doing. But afterwards, talking to Reynolds, he mentioned that, try not to get emotional. Like, Derek Jeter is a guy that stays, you know, ice, tries to, like, but has particular, reasons why he does this, particular things that he does. And instead of making eye contact and looking at his family, knowing that that is one of those areas that will make him flutter or get emotional, he looked above them. He looked above their heads. So he wasn't actually looking at his family when addressing them. He was just looking in their direction. So everybody thought he was looking at this family. The family probably thought he was looking at the family. But in fact, no, he's looking at the people behind them. He's looking at Jordan, looking at Ahmad Rashad and whomever else, CC probably there. Yeah, classic.
That's a
public speaking 101.
Public speaking 101 is, don't make eye contact with anyone that you have a relationship with, because there's too much baggage there. Stare at the wall blankly, or stare at someone you've never in your life spoken to, because this is not going to have any impact on you.
But overall, I mean,
I think if you could tell when he was speaking, like, he had a speech written out and he would glance down at it. And for a brief moment, he would revert back to reading, but then it just would flow out naturally. And that's when, like, the speech really, in my mind, was good and natural. And, like, his personality came through a little bit. So, I mean, it's such a nerve-wracking position to be in. I know.
And that's what he spoke about that too, even just saying, you know, it's not the fans, it's not the moment that's too big for him. For that particular case, it was the guys behind him, all his peers, or the guys that did so well, you know, before him, that paved that way. That's what made him nervous, to make sure that he was up to the up to the part to live up to their expectations, or you know, not even their expectations, but the way that they have shown as they were there before him.
And it's like he knows this speech is going to get analyzed. Like, not way we're analyzing it. We're not really analyzing it, but it's going to get analyzed by writers.
Dumbass, like, jackass, well, people are going to try to...
Yeah, what does he really mean by this statement? And, like, I'm sure there'll be someone who tries to make something political out of this, because, like, that's what happens on the internet in 2021. So in that sense, also, there's just pressure to, like, how do I say what I want to say without sticking my foot in my mouth?
And which he's been a pro at forever, though. Like, that's exactly what he does.
He has, but if you've realized, Jeter with the Marlins and what he's done with the Marlins organization has got more heat than he ever did with the Yankees.
Well, yeah, because he has to make public decisions, whereas with the Yankees, he's just playing a game. You know, he doesn't really have to respond in any way. Nothing is essentially on him besides the on-the-field play. He's the guy in charge there. He has to make decisions. He has to do them with, you know, relative conviction. He has to actually make moves. So it's you know, you're opening yourself up to criticism when you do that. He did mention, so kind of a throwback to acknowledgement of the people behind him with the beginning and celebratory congratulations to other people, and then just kind of recognizing the people behind him as what would, you know, kind of make him nervous a bit. But also at the end of this, and he's done this before too, but really talked in the moment about the current players and the responsibility to the game and do the right thing and give back to the game and all these things. So saying the right things for the players today, just like, you know, the dude's forever like trying to plant the tracks for future. You know, he's always been conscious of I think what he says in a way where, you know, he knows he's a role model to a lot of different people, and he knows he's an example to a lot of different people. And he took an opportunity to hit that again today too.
Of course he had to make mention of the one writer.
The one jackass that didn't vote for him. Yeah.
And I don't know if that actually does bother him. He is
It bothers him.
He's certainly the type of player, as most athletes are, they have chips on their shoulder, or they'll invent chips on their shoulder to motivate themselves. Like, we learned that from the Last Dance Michael Jordan thing. It's like he would invent beef with people just to motivate himself for another game on a Tuesday night. And like, that's what you have to do sometimes. Like, yeah, no one needs motivation for a playoff game, but you need motivation for Tuesday against Kansas City. And that's the type of player that Derek Jeter was, to motivate himself to make sure that he showed up every night. And yeah, maybe that one voter who didn't vote for him bothers him still. Would you rather be one vote short or like 20 votes short?
One vote short.
I think so.
Because
I think
it's not
that's
a
right answer.
But it's not, there's no right answer. It depends on how you're looking at it. But this is different. That's like saying, would I rather give up one hit through nine innings or like four hits? Well, it depends on when that hit came, I think, first of all. And in that case, I might say four hits. But the Hall of Fame, like, come on. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows
that guy's a jackass.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
he received the second highest percent of all time.
Next to Mariano.
Next to Mariano. And then
there you go.
I think Griffey Jr. is the third most. I think like two people didn't vote for Griffey Jr. Like the whole, this is not going to be a conversation about the Hall of Fame voting. We've done that. I hate it. Let's just not do that again. But yeah, I enjoyed the afternoon overall. I thought it was fun. And I thought that, Jeter's speech was great and made me a little sad also. A little sad because...
Well, that's like what nostalgia does. It ties it. It pulls at your emotions. It pulls at your strings because you're remembering how joyous occasions were in the past. And they are exactly that. They're gone. They're in the past. You already lived them. You can't relive them. You can think about them. So there's a happiness element of that, of nostalgia, but there's also that emotional sadness that's mixed into this chemical craziness that makes you feel something different. But it's all good in the end.
It's like, because I know I was watching him speak and I was like, I will never care about a baseball player as much as I cared about Derek Jeter again in my entire life.
No, it's true.
So that's just that. And it's because I'm no longer a child. Like, I know why. I know why it's the answer. Like,
that's part of it. Not to say that some people don't still care that deeply about the teams.
Even if the Yankees somehow turn shit around once again this year and win a World Series and Aaron Judge leads them to the next five World Series, I'm not going to care about Aaron Judge the way I cared about Derek Jeter because I'm not 13 years old.
But I will say this. I will say that Aaron Judge has probably given me as close of a feeling of like, I don't even know how to describe it, but Jeter was like the guy, you know, even going through it. I don't think I ever labeled him as like my guy when he was playing. If someone asked me who my favorite New York Yankee was, I would probably say Mattingly. I would say Jeter's up there, but for whatever reason, it felt like the easy answer. So it was never like the answer. Even though at the end of the day, like if you had to choose one person from that, and even if you grew up as like a Paul O'Neill guy or a Tino guy or a Bernie guy, I bet a lot of those people would say Jeter because I think it was kind of assumed almost, right? It was like you assumed Jeter was that guy too, but Jeter, so it was almost like, who's your other guy?
Right, exactly. That's a great way to put it. Jeter was everyone's favorite player. Who was the player other than Jeter that you liked? Mine was Paul O'Neill. Yours was Don Mattingly. But yes,
Don Mattingly was before. It was a different like era.
Okay, you know, fine. Yours was Bernie, or someone's was Pettit, or someone's was freaking Tino Martinez. Whoever it was, everyone had a guy other than Jeter, but it was always Jeter and another guy.
Right, exactly. I think Judge got me back to that point where, I can really rally behind one player. He makes it easy. At least he did for me.
Certainly.
A lot of people get on him about the injury stuff, which I think is just whatever.
I mean, that's part of it. Like, Derek, just like freaking look at what Jeter said in his speech. Like, he played every day. Like, that's
I understand
part of
that.
It.
I understand that. There's also a piece of this where if Judge were put in a position and had the winning years that Jeter had, I don't know, even though we're older, we're still going to, that piece of your childhood comes back when winning happens.
Winning is-
It's a different euphoria.
Winning's the cure-all, and I think it was-
It makes you feel differently about people, too.
They were primed for it. Like, we don't need to rehash this, but they were primed for it at the end of 2017, and it hasn't happened yet.
Sons of bitches.
All right, that's gonna do it.
I hope they watch today's speech and understand what you could
see
this, be.
Did you see the pictures from Yankee Stadium? They had it up on the big board, and there was a bunch of guys out in center field watching, but not everybody.
Who was missing?
We don't know because
Gerrit Cole's birthday today. That's what we didn't even talk about that from last night. I know this is not about that. We'll talk about that on Friday.
Can we not ruin the Derek Jeter episode with Gerrit Cole injury talk? I mean,
sorry.
But yeah, we'll do a Friday Fives. I the pictures that circulated from like the reporters and stuff were from the booth, so you couldn't tell who's out there watching. But there were guys out there watching. I'd say maybe 20 guys out there watching. So hope you guys have enjoyed Derek Jeter Day. We did a couple throwback episodes. A brief history episode on how Derek Jeter fell to the Yankees in the draft. He did mention the scout. Which was one thing that we said would happen. He mentioned Grouch, the scout, and then also the top five career moments of Derek Jeter, which Scott and I recorded about it a year and a half ago. Go check those episodes out for nostalgia purposes. And also check out the episode I did talking to Johnny Junta, who's a Blue Jays fan. He also has his own podcast where he interviews current and former players. So busy day on the Bronx Pinstripes feed. Any parting words on the Derek Jeter ceremony?
I enjoyed hearing him talk about everything. I thought he did a good job. Nothing
Bernie,
new.
Bernie
with the national anthem. Yeah, you know, it's cool how those guys can tie it all together. I hope they get some opportunities to hang out together. He mentioned afterwards that he hadn't really hung out with them yet. I'm sure because of the whirlwind of the day and who knows what kind of like COVID protocols they have in place. I don't know. But I hope they get an opportunity to have a round table steak dinner. Hopefully somebody records it so that we can watch it later.
All right. We will talk to you guys again on Friday. We'll do a Friday Fives talking about every bad thing that's happened this week so far. We'll talk to you then.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.